100. Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium, 245 grams of magnesium, 3 grams of
zinc. Hang on, slow down.
And a tablespoon. And one tablespoon. Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
and
the recipe?
That's the recipe.
Oh,
if
damn.
You would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondence from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
See the light, touch the light, we're together now. I'm better, so much better now. Look to the skies, give me life, we're together now. We've only just begun, hypnotized by drums. Until forever comes, you'll find us chasing the sun. They said this day wouldn't come, and we refuse to run. We've only just begun, you'll find us chasing the sun. Oh, 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 oh.
And there's nothing like chasing the sun when you're actually powered by a vegan diet. It's World Meat Free Week, which is an upgrade obviously from last year's World Meat Free Day. And to address some of the issues with respect to this, which is now in its fourth year, we're delighted to welcome spokesperson for World Meat Free Week. That would be the awesomely talented Jay McGuinness. Good morning, Jay. How are you?
Good morning. Great, thank you.
Excellent.
Thanks for the compliment.
Oh,
I really appreciate that.
Very important. I mean, if we can't sort of promote the wanted in all sorts of ways, what can we do, really? And yourself,
right,
of course.
Up.
Okay, now let's talk a little bit more about this World Meat Free Week, because obviously it's running from now until the 17th of June. Although people say, oh, you need it, we don't need our meat. We can actually exist without meat quite effectively. And this is a real opportunity to actually put the spotlight on reducing meat intake for the sake of the planet.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that there's a really traditional idea that you always have your meat and two veg, and I think that goes back, you know, generations. But as you say, you know, we can choose not to. We're completely happy omnivores, and I think that right now people are used to eating way more meat than we need, and it's not about, like, bending anyone over and forcing them to become vegan. It's more just during this week, taking an opportunity to swap out one meal for a meat-free one, and then, you know, not feel like you're missing out anything. There's so many amazing, like, Indian food and meat-free products that you can experiment with and try, and just sort of reduce that impact on the planet. you know, if you recycle and you worry about that sort of stuff, then it's nice to put a bit of a spotlight on what you eat as well, I think.
I was quite astounded to see some of the facts that are actually put together for this, that actually if we did observe World Meat-Free Week from that point of view, we could actually save collectively over 1.2 billion Big Macs, or the equivalent in terms of calories. That is awesome in so many ways from that point of view. And we've heard, obviously, over the years that actually, although we love our cattle, we love our friends from that sort of point of view, actually the deforestation that's being caused by putting more beef production on the market is not good, certainly for rainforests around the world, certainly in the Amazon.
Yeah, it's really not good, and they're in a bit of a pickle because that's some of those people's only income, and it's really tough, especially to be told by a European, and we've got rid of loads of our ancient forests, that what they're doing is bad for the environment. But I think there's a way of doing it and really balancing it, and I don't think it's about eradicating meat, and I think there's probably some farmers listening and thinking, well, what am I supposed to do? But I think that there really is room for some really responsible responsible meat production, and farmers raise cows. They love them, you know, as much as they meet quite a sticky end. I think this isn't about beating people over the head and telling them, all of this must stop. I think it's just about balancing out how much meat people eat. So if there's someone eating a bacon sandwich right now, don't feel too bad. Don't beat yourself up. You've got an opportunity. You've got some wiggle room to slightly improve your choices, if you want to.
Nudging is one of those public relations terms that's often used as a theory to actually get people to gradually change their behaviour and so on. And it is actually a change of behaviour that we're asking for here in terms of reducing carbon footprint emissions, saving greenhouse gas emissions. This is, again, just one way in which hopefully everybody can actually help do their bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think those stats can be really quite intimidating because you think about, the millions of miles of land that we use for that. But I don't think any one person is personally responsible for all of that. I think it's just knowing that you can do a little bit to change. And you know what? People want to. I think that you could be some, 15-year-old, social, progressive person listening right now and think, this is going to be amazing. Or you could be an 80-year-old, six kids, 20 grandkids, and always have eaten meat your whole life and go, you know what, I can make just as much difference to the next person. So I think
indeed.
It's doable.
And now, as a winner of Strictly Come Dancing, that presumably was part of, again, good nutrition. It's like having a Ferrari and actually putting in top quality fuel and all sorts of other areas. Clearly, that's just evidence. And obviously, when you're on tour with The Wanted and so on, it's important to actually keep your nutritional levels high from that perspective. Noting you're actually down as an avid vegetarian. How long have you actually been vegetarian, or has it been a lifelong choice? You kind of always been a vegetarian.
I've been vegetarian since I was 13 years old, and it was just through education. I learned about a vegetarian diet at school. You're learning about different diets. My best friend was vegetarian and totally idolised him. Hi, Ewan, if you're listening. My mum has five kids, and my mum and dad obviously took two of them. I was the only one, and she'd just make a little separate meal for me from the age of 13 onwards, and then I moved out at 16, and I just never looked back. And it actually was quite a big and quick transition from being a full-blown meat eater to, zero. But I think that isn't necessarily what we're asking for. Just during this week, between the 11th and the 17th, just switch one out and just try and, try and find a recipe that you think you'll like. And if you do find one, send it to me, because I'm a burgeoning foodie, I think is the right word.
We'll have to put you in touch with our regular Thursday correspondent, editor of Waitrose magazine, William Sitwell. In terms of the overall sort of set, obviously last year World Meat Free Day, this year World Meat Free Week. Will it be World Meat Free Month in 2019?
I think becoming World Meat Free Week was less about extending it and more about giving people time to pick their day, because if it's a one day, people can't always come on a collective. If you've got a really busy Monday, sometimes you just have your dinner ready, so it's more about during the week, if it's whether at the weekend you get together with your friends or the kids and make something like a nice Indian curry, or it's basically giving people options.
And the best way to actually find out more details, Jay, about what we've been talking about today, is there an online or indeed social media presence that people can go to find out more about World Meat Free Week?
Of course, there's worldmeatfreeweek.com. You can also go to the Twitter if you Google it, and ask me as well, because I am not only trying to talk about this, but I'm also learning every day. I actually don't know very many vegans or vegetarians or flexitarians, people that are trying to reduce their meat. So I've actually really loved getting to know a lot of really interesting people, because there's some real characters out there.
Absolutely. Now, three final questions to actually wrap up with, Joe. First of all, we're going to actually award you the role of music producer. We're going to run past you some of the tunes we can actually run with. All Time Low, Glad You Came, Gold Forever, Heart Vacancy, Lightning, Lose My Mind, or Walks Like Rihanna. Any of those that you sort of particularly think, yeah, we should go with that one? By The Wanted, by the way, just in case you're wondering.
Thank you very much. I'll get the check in the mail. Huh? I'll go with Gold Forever. I think every day can be a really special day, and that's what that song is about.
That makes perfect sense. So the final two questions. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you, Jay McGuinness?
It was incredibly satisfying and stimulating. Thank you.
Just like a good vegan diet, etc.
Right.
I take it that we can connect with you again in the not too distant future. Hopefully we'll speak again about dietary habits and more.
I'm at your beck and call.
Say my name like it's the last time. Live today like it's the last night. We won't to cry, but we know it's alright. 'Cause I'm with you and you're with me. Butterflies, butterflies, we were meant to fly. You and I, you and I. Colors in the sky, we can rule the world someday somehow. But we'll never be as bright as we are now. We're standing.
face, don't grow so fast. Make a special wish that will always last. Rub his magic lantern, he will make your dreams come true for you. Ride the rainbow to the other side. Catch a falling star and then take a ride to the river that sings and the clover that brings good luck to you.
Indeed, the power of imagination, or as we've occasionally said, parents are very difficult to bring into the world. If we're looking at a recent survey that was produced by Lego Juniors today, over a third of parents feel anxious about their child starting at reception, with 39% admitting they haven't prepared for their child starting at school this September. One of the biggest questions parents have about the whole process is, what can they be doing to help their children's development? Well, who better then to address such topics and vital aspects in the growth of the next generation than child development psychologist extraordinaire Dr. Sam Wass. How are you, Sam?
Hi, Alex. I'm great, thanks.
Excellent. So this particular, each generation, I suppose, we wonder how the human race actually exists to go from generation to generation, really, with all the fears and concerns about this. Sometimes people obviously do panic about ensuring that their children get the best possible start when they're heading off to school.
Yeah, it's a very natural for parents to feel kind of worried about this, you know, that moment where you first wave goodbye to them at the school gate, you know, is a really, really big moment in any child's life. So it's very natural, you know, parents are worried. They kind of worry, you know, our research that we've been doing with Lego Juniors kind of has been asking parents kind of what they're most worried about. You know, often it's kind of focused on the key skills, kind of English and maths. But also another thing that's coming through is lots of parents worrying about their child's basic independence skills. So, you know, it's the first time that kind of, it might be the first time that they're having to, you know, unbutton their own coat, you know, take themselves to the toilet, you know, feed themselves, those kinds of basic independence skills. So what we're trying to promote this idea is, a lot of the time, kind of a lot of really, really important key skills that are going to be really important to your child, they don't have to be learned. You know, there are definitely some parents that would sit down and practice with their child, you know, opening and closing their school lunchbox before they go in. But a lot of the time, it doesn't have to feel like, you know, some kind of scary, stressy kind of preparation for the big day. In fact, a lot of these really key skills you can get just by play, you know, putting children in a situation where they're excited, you know, happy, motivated and interested, you know, particularly I think one really key skill, well, in fact, there are several key skills that are really important for young children. One of the really basic ones that is a factor really quite strongly for some children is basic fine motor skills, you know. So just this simply ability to control very precisely, you know, what you do. You know, young children, we all know they're much clumsier than we are, you know, and that's definitely something that you learn. But that's really something that kind of you can really pick up through play. A lot of reception teachers are saying this now, you know, a young child, you know, often boys kind of more than girls, you know, struggling with learning to write, learning very to write precisely. And it's something that a lot of children, you know, a lot of reception teachers hear say, you know, a bit of play, a bit of precise motor skills with something like Lego can really help.
The old classic line that the more complex the mind, the greater the need for the simplicity of play. It's interesting.
Oh, that's nice, yeah.
You also sort of raised the issue about not worrying about children making mistakes. We learn from our mistakes.
Yeah, and that's something that's really, really hard. You know, when you're sitting playing with a child, you know, I was doing it yesterday, and I was thinking, I've just seen a mistake. I mustn't correct it. I must let the child work out for themselves, you know, what's wrong. And it's so hard because as adults, we're so used to telling children what to do. But all of the research is, you know, research suggests it's really important to play with a child. They learn a huge amount, you know, just simply from doing a task, doing a puzzle, doing some Lego together with an adult. They learn a lot from that. But the other thing that's really important is it doesn't just turn into, you know, you taking over. You know, it's all right, I know what's what, you've just got to follow and pass me the pieces, you know. It's really important that they're the ones who are taking kind of the initiative, they're the ones who are making the mistakes, and then as soon as they make a mistake, you don't just step in and say, no, you've done that wrong, but you just let them make the mistake and let them work out for themselves what's wrong and how to fix it. But I say, speaking from personal experience, it's really, really hard to do.
I was fascinated by the fact that you actually introduced visualization, which is quite interesting in terms of that's something we know that athletes and sort of somewhere up the sort of psychological scale, we all start notion about the importance of visualization. But actually starting very early can be a very positive aspect, I would have thought.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting area, Alex. And that kind of, a lot of the time that's come in from the idea of kind of learning from screens, so how young children learn from screens. And they do learn something from screens, but they find it, particularly young children, find it much harder than we'd imagine to translate a flat object that they see on a screen into something in the real world. So, you know, things like language, you know, they can learn what it looks like on a screen, but then they wouldn't necessarily recognize that same object if they saw it in 3D in the real world. And something like Lego can be a really great way to do that, because it's a flat object. You know, they see a picture, and then they've got to build a 3D model. So it's a really good, challenging learning situation for children. But it's also just important to be aware that it's the kind of thing it wouldn't even occur to you that they might find hard, but they will find it much trickier than you'd think, and they will need supporting in it.
We certainly seem to have come away since Piaget was actually experimenting with his own children and actually getting his kind of cognitive development phases put together.
We're getting there. You know, the more we understand, you know, we've changed a lot since Piaget. He was very strict, you know, very, you know, the child learns this at this phase and that at that phase. But it's much more kind of organic now, much more, and also much more importantly, kind of, we're appreciative just how much children are in control of their own learning, you know, how they seek out their learning and how it's much more the role of the parent to support it. You know, old-fashioned education used to be much, much more about, you know, teaching children something. You know, I'm an adult, I know the answer, and I'm going to tell it to you. But increasingly, we're realizing that, in fact, much, much more effective form of learning is let the child ask the question, and, you know, you're supporting them and answering kind of the question when they ask it.
Managing the teaching and learning experience, perhaps. What about teamwork? This is something I thought was interesting, that it's noted that teamwork is something that young children tend to find hard, so it's something they need to build on, that stop being blatant individuals.
Yeah, I've seen that. So that's something. So I've been working on this Channel 4 series for a few years now, The Secret Life of four, five, and used to be six-year-olds in the first series. And it's something you see develop so much between the ages of four and six. So we give a lot of children, you know, a group task. And four-year-olds, the bit that they find really hard is, you know, I'm imagining something, so I've got in my head an idea of what I want to build. But they just find it really hard to imagine that what they've got in their head isn't the same as what another child has in their head, you know. So you see it all the time, you know, I'm very focused, I'm building what I'm imagining, and then I'm getting really annoyed with you because you're not imagining what I'm imagining, and I can't get my head around the fact that you've got a different idea. This idea that you might negotiate, that you might kind of have an imagination in this shared space between you, it's something that four-year-olds find very challenging. And then by six, though, you watch six-year-olds do exactly the same task, and they're really used to, just because they've had this experience of starting school, they're really used to this idea of negotiating, you know, we're going to talk about what we're going to build before we build it. But these are all skills that most four-year-olds find, you know, completely beyond them. So, you know, again, Lego can be a really interesting way to start to build these team skills, because certainly in the early stage, you know, the first stage of building, you know, there's a picture of what you're trying to build kind of there in front of you. And kind of as you later on, you know, once you've built it, you can go off and build something else. But kind of the early stage, there is kind of a right and wrong, you know, so it either looks like what's on the box or it doesn't. And that can be a really great way for 2-4-year-olds, you know, they're having to talk and learn some really important kind of skills about how you sit and you solve a problem, you know, as a group, you know, as a team. Absolutely vital skills. But also don't worry, because 4-year-olds will find that kind of thing really challenging. You know, a lot of 4-year-olds, you know, it's something that are just starting to learn.
Absolutely amazing, and I think very sound advice there. Presumably in terms of social media, at Lego Group or at Dr. Sam Wass will be useful lines to go. Is there any other place you'd suggest that people should check out as well, Sam?
Yeah, there's a load of stuff, an absolute ton of stuff on the Lego website. So lego.com/juniors. Loads of videos, apps, loads of really good resources there for parents.
Well, I'm very tempted to actually go out with a rounding blast of Everything is Awesome from their Lego Movie, but I think we might hold on that for a little time. Dr. Sam Wass, child development psychologist extraordinaire, many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Great. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Turn the lights off.